The Dallas Morning News reported today that Thomas Duncan arrived in the emergency room of the Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital late on the evening of September 25th. So he's complaining of a high fever and abdominal pain. When questioned by a nurse, Duncan admitted that he had been in Liberia. He hadn't just been in Liberia. He lived in Liberia as recently as the prior week. At that point, according to an August 1 protocol issued by the Centers for Disease Control, Duncan should have been placed in an isolation unit and tested for Ebola immediately. However, the news reports that key medical personnel at the hospital were not told of Duncan's travel history and that he was given antibiotics and sent home, a decision that could have exposed dozens of people to the virus. Duncan's condition later worsened. He returned to the hospital Sunday in an ambulance. At that point, the CDC protocol was followed. The Ebola diagnosis was confirmed. Dr. Mark Lester, the Southeast clinical leader for the hospital's parent company, Texas Health Resources, acknowledged Wednesday that Duncan had voluntarily provided his travel history. It wasn't his travel history, it's where he lived. However, Lester said, that information was not fully disseminated. Lester said, did not say who he thought might be responsible for the miscommunication. Hospital officials defended the initial handling of Duncan, issuing a statement describing his fever as low grade and insisting his condition did not warrant admission. They added that they are still investigating why Duncan's travel history was not covered or not conveyed to the doctors who sent him home. So it was the doctors, according to this release, who sent him home, so they are equally culpable. Hospital epidemiologist Dr. Edward Goodman told the Associated Press that the patient did not show the riskier symptoms of vomiting and diarrhea. I want to tell you a little story about Texas, malpractice in Texas, and the legislation in Texas that insulates Texas healthcare providers from being responsible for their own stupidity, their own egregious behavior. My son was performing an experiment exactly as it was laid out by a professor at a hospital. He was paid to do so by his university. He is a graduate student earning a PhD in the specific subject that he was teaching. The experiment that was stupidly conceived, and the vial holding the reaction exploded. Acid poured over my son's face. No one in the department responsible for this experiment responded. The professor was notified at my son's call. He called her. She panicked. She had no idea what to do. No one at the school did anything on behalf of my son. He took himself, after looking after a student who just got one tiny splat on her arm. After my son looked after a fellow student, acid eating away at his face, no one helping him, he went to the student health center right across from the science building where the accident took place. And they wouldn't treat him. He finally begged them for baking soda to neutralize the acid and a bowl of water that he could, and some towels that he could soak the towels in the baking soda to neutralize the acid, and had to beg them on and on and on, scream at them to even get them to do that. The doctors there refused to help him, acid eating away at his face. My son then had to call a friend to transport him to a local hospital in agony. And this Texas hospital was absolutely clueless, totally ill-prepared to treat an acid burn in a city known not only for its university, but the university's most intense, most important building happens to be its science building. And so in a university town known to be doing experiments like this, the hospital had absolutely no clue. It was my son who had to explain to the physicians what had happened and what the treatment should be. They released him. They didn't do anything for him. When I engaged in this process, the first thing that I found is that Texas had passed tort reform that makes it impossible to hold anybody accountable. They could all just throw up their hands and say, we don't care that his face is being eaten up with acid. We're not going to do squat. We don't care. It's our fault that his face is covered in acid. We're not going to do anything. In fact, we're going to abuse him. I met with the administration of that school and found them almost universally immoral. Texas has a serious problem. Serious problem. Now, part of the Texas problem is that in Texas, Baptist religion is supreme, and the lack of thinking that takes place amongst religious people is egregious. Part of it is that Texas passed tort reform that went way too far in protecting hospitals like this. For example, if I had a loved one who was exposed to Ebola because of the stupidity of the Presbyterian Texas Hospital, you should have every right to sue them, but you can't. Not in Texas. It is just egregious what exists in Texas. If you live in Texas, you ought to know that as it relates to your health care, they're in the Stone Age. And when they screw up like this, which is an inevitable situation, because when you're not held accountable, people do really stupid stuff. And there's no way to hold them accountable. This was inevitable in Texas. You're in a very dangerous situation related to your health in Texas, and no one takes responsibility. The president of this university, when I met with him on it, what a scumbag. I mean, an absolute, grotesquely dishonest, immoral scumbag. I want to tell you, folks, you got a real problem in America at large with regard to accountability. But in Texas, it's a bigger problem still. The New York Times said that Duncan, in his mid-40s, helped transport a pregnant woman suffering from Ebola to a hospital in Liberia. We now know far more than what the New York Times has reported, why he was there doing that. But based upon the incubation period of Ebola, it appears that he first contracted the disease 10 to 12 days prior to that, where she was turned away from lack of space. Duncan helped bring the woman back to her family's home and carried her into the house. She died that night, as did her brother, who was on the other end of her body carrying her back into the home. 4 days later, Duncan left for the United States, citing the woman's parents and neighbors. Texas healthcare officials said that up to 18 people, including 5 children, had contact with the Ebola patients since he returned to the United States. He's not returning to the United States. He lives in Monrovia, Liberia. The children had gone to school early this week, but have since been sent home. Ebola spreads through contact with bodily fluids, although there is no evidence that Ebola can be transmitted in an airborne fashion. The study amongst monkeys has proven that. Blood, saliva are also means to convey it. Health experts say limits to its potential to infect others like airborne diseases is lessened, but they are not obviously telling you the whole truth. Because there have been studies showing conclusively that Ebola can be transmitted in an airborne fashion. The long window of time before patients exhibit signs of infection, which I don't see why everyone's incapable of doing the math here. We're talking about 10 days from the time that he, as a tenant of the family, picked up this woman's legs and carried her into a cab and out of the cab back into her home where she died that night. 10 days. He knew that he had contracted Ebola because she died and the brother died. And it was 10 days later that he had the full-blown symptoms of Ebola. It says still the long window of time before patients exhibit the signs of infection, typically 21 days. It didn't occur in this case, not unless he contracted the disease almost 2 weeks prior to his contact with this young woman. Fever, vomiting, and diarrhea. He had two of the three and may have had all three. Means an infected person can travel without detection. Airlines and hotels companies' shares dropped sharply on U.S. markets over concerns of Ebola spread outside Africa might curtail travel. The Dallas patient had initially sought treatment at the Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital late last Thursday and was sent home with antibiotics rather than being observed further, even though he told a nurse where he had been. We'll return to this story. And Shattering Myths continues. A nurse at the hospital. By the way, my view of the Presbyterian Church is as negative as it is the Texas university systems, as is the overall healthcare system in Texas. So I would give all of them an F. But the nurse asked about travel as part of a triage checklist. Now, she shouldn't even have to ask about it. I mean, if this guy was any kind of a human being, he would have first called the hospital and said, listen, I want to know where I should go. I've been exposed to Ebola. I'm developing the symptoms of Ebola. Two of the people that I was in physical contact with have died of Ebola. I need to make arrangements to be, and I'm projectile vomiting. I need to have arrangements made to take me to a quarantine unit and to be tested for Ebola. That's what a real human being would have done. Now, Duncan didn't do those things. Shame on him. Shame on the United States for allowing somebody whose original departure location was Monrovia, Liberia, to enter the United States. Shame on the U.S. Customs. Shame on this hospital for not processing this intelligently. When Monrovia, Liberia came up in the discussion of a man suffering the symptoms of Ebola. Shame on everybody here. I mean, this is just a complete disgrace from top to bottom. An indictment of the United States, an indictment of its leadership, indictment of its medical profession, an indictment of the state of Texas, an indictment of our educational system, processing people who just can't think, as well as the world at large, where individuals will knowingly expose others to this horrible disease, selfishly. Shame on us. The nurse asked about the travel as part of a triage checklist and was told about it. Regretfully, that information was not communicated throughout the full teams. As a result, the full import of that information wasn't factored into the full decision-making, Texas hospital official Mark Lester said. You like that? Was not fully communicated, which means it was communicated. Wasn't fully communicated throughout the full teams. In other words, it got to somebody that ought to have been able to make a difference. As a result, the full import of that information wasn't factored into the full decision-making. It was factored into the decision-making. It was communicated. They couldn't think. We are educating morons because of political correctness. Our educational system is a complete and utter disaster. People know lots of stuff. They understand nothing. They can't execute a valid progression of what is the moral, what is the logical, what is the most merciful, what is the most appropriate course of action. Cause and consequence. We can't process that information anymore. We can't think. We've lost the ability as a nation to think. You can't resolve that. There is no fix for that. No matter how much information I provide, no matter how much somebody is devoted to study, if you're incapable of processing information rationally, morally, logically, if you can't think, if you can't exercise good judgment, nothing anybody says is going to make any difference. You're going to continue to chase your tail. You'll continue to be religious. You'll continue to be patriotic. You'll continue to support the military. You'll continue to act like an idiot and make bad decisions. Squander your every opportunity. Infectious disease experts said that the time gap represented a critical missed opportunity that may have led others to be exposed to the virus. At the apartment complex, Osmanovic said that he met the man three times over the years when he was visiting his family. See, he lives in Monrovia, Liberia. He was just visiting his family. Most of the neighborhood is from Liberia, from Somalia or the Sudan. You know, if they're from Somalia or the Sudan, where there are folks in the southern Sudan that are animists, a handful of Christians have survived, but most of the Sudanese are Muslims. I think Somalia is 100% Islamic. Liberia, about 50%. I wonder how that enters this equation. It goes on and on. In the apartment that this man, Duncan, exposed his extended family, as well as his own son, to Ebola. Family still living in the apartment. It says the only sign on Wednesday of the family's presence was someone occasionally pulling back the white blinds to peek out into the parking lot. A security officer blocked the entrance to the complex with instructions to only let residents in and out. Good God, folks. He was puking all over the place around and in that apartment. Shut it down. The family members ought to all be in quarantine. Those that lived with him in that apartment all ought to be in quarantine. Those who are close in proximity to where he was throwing up and where he was residing in that unit, they ought to be moved. Good grief. Are we ever going to make an intelligent decision here? It's like the entire authorized, legitimate control mechanism over America have just gone brain dead. You know, it's like a computer where the laptop and the battery has run down and it's not plugged in. It's just not able to process anything. The screen goes dark. Process is turned off. It's like what's happened to America. The patient arrived in Texas, as we know, on September 20th. And first saw treatment 6 days later. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, the Liberian government said that the man showed no signs of fever or other symptoms when he left the country on September 19th. The Liberian official, by the way, should never have been allowed to leave. And Liberia doesn't get a pass here. This is a man who was in direct contact with two individuals, both intimate, direct physical contact with two individuals who died within 24 hours of the time that he was with them. He should never have left that country. A Liberian official said that the man traveled through Brussels to the United States. Had a way to go, Belgium. United Airlines said in a statement the man took one of its flights from Brussels to Washington Dulles Airport. Had a way to go, America. You know, when I go to Washington Dulles Airport, and I haven't been there in a while, but when I have gone through it, the customs officials are overwhelmingly Islamic. Even the women are wearing their hijab. It's just disgusting. It gives you the creeps. You say, good God, have we learned nothing? He said that he changed planes there to travel to Dallas-Fort Worth, but it would have cleared customs in Dulles. You know, the primary airport of the nation's capital. Good job, America. Good grief. You know, I think if we were just to shut down the FBI, the CIA, Department of Homeland Security, the U.S. military, the Senate, the Congress, the White House, the justice system, Supreme Court, just shut it all down. Just say, you know, we're lost. We're counterproductive. Let's just turn over all responsibility back to the states, and let's just stop pretending. Shut it all down. Unfortunately, even shut down, the people would inherit $17.5 trillion worth of direct debt and another $40 to $50 trillion worth of unfunded mandates. A spokesperson for Brussels Airlines, the only airline to fly direct scheduled services between Brussels and Monrovia. Boy, that's bright, folks. Yeah, Belgium, here's your sign. You are really stupid. Said it could not confirm that the passenger had flown with the company. Oh, brilliant. Just brilliant. You should be so proud. We also have not been contacted by anyone to tell us to take measures or to contact passengers because of an infected passenger traveling with us, their spokesperson said. So here's Brussels Airlines. I didn't even know there was a Brussels Airlines, by the way. And I've been in and out of Belgium a lot. That flies scheduled flights from Monrovia, Liberia, the heart of the Ebola outbreak. Stupid enough to do that. And here's the United States. We now know that this man had contracted Ebola, has Ebola, and was on that airline, and we didn't even bother to contact the airline? And all the people that were on that flight with him don't know? They didn't even bother to contact the airline. Man, we are so lost as a nation. Somewhere along the way, hopefully, people who are listening are going to say, good riddance to the government. I'm not going to be patriotic anymore. Sure as hell not going to sing a national anthem to the flag of this country. When nationally, we are this stupid. This irresponsible. Separately, on Wednesday, citing a heightened sense of awareness of Ebola, the Queen's Medical Center in Honolulu, Hawaii, said it was treating a patient in isolation. At this time, the patient's history and clinical presentation do not appear to be consistent with Ebola, and the patient may be diagnosed with a number of conditions other than Ebola, but we're certainly putting him in isolation. In Tuesday's CDC briefing, Dr. Thomas Frieden, who is the head of the CDC, the center's director, disclosed that Duncan left Liberia to visit family members living in the United States. This editorial here says clearly we deserve more detail. Yeah. In fact, we didn't even get that detail until it was released by Liberia. We deserve more detail because this choice is another possible point of intervention. Are hops from this stricken region to destinations across the Atlantic for vacation and family get-togethers reasonable at this moment? Would a reasonable individual, a moral individual, who knows that he has contracted Ebola and that the two people that he's been in contact with, direct physical contact with, have both died, going to visit his estranged son? What kind of a sick man are we dealing with here? And I don't mean sick in the sense of he's contracted Ebola. I mean sick in the terms of warped, immoral. Here, let me infect my son. That ought to serve him, right? We deserve more detail because this choice is another possible point of intervention. Are hops across the Atlantic for vacation reasonable at this moment? Should travelers be required to describe a compelling reason to visit the United States when their choice to do so affects others? Yeah, if you're a Liberian, you ought not be allowed out of Liberia. Not until this thing dies down. To that end, a bio-theist, Art Kaplan, bioethicist, I should say. I'm sure not bio-theist. Well, I guess a bio-ethicist and a bio-theist would be somewhat similar. He's talking about the morality of biology. Art Kaplan points out some of the rationale for patient privacy may need to be rethought. May need to be rethought. And you're an ethicist? May need to be rethought? Given the importance of identifying the contacts? Come on, pal. The Dallas victim's identity was a closely guarded secret by the Presbyterian Hospital due to the long-established norms for controlling private health information. Stupid. It's immoral. It's unjust. It's irresponsible. Do those rules apply to a situation where contacts need to be identified urgently when the victim is at risk of long-term stigma associated with a fast-moving disease process from which he will either survive or be non-contagious or not? Why are you even asking this question? The answer is so obvious that if you even have to pose the question, you're not thinking. Liberian officials released Duncan's name Wednesday, irrespective of the hospital's deference to privacy. This makes sense when public health is the priority. It's obviously not the priority in America. But there was another error that followed Duncan's initial release from the emergency room. On September 28th, when he returned to Presbyterian Hospital, this time deathly ill in an ambulance, the ER staff immediately suspected Ebola, Presbyterian told reporters, and called the infectious disease team. How then did that ambulance and its drivers continue in circulation, unquarantined, for the next 48 hours? Good questions all. It is a case study in what's happened to America. It is a case study in the consequence of the American educational system. It is a case study in the complete disregard for the health of others when dealing with deadly diseases, whether it be Islam or Ebola. Far too few people can process information rationally. Far too few people can make good judgments. Exercise good judgment. And this is happening whether it's the fight against Islamic terrorism, the fight against Ebola. And you're seeing the cracks. You're seeing the faults. And it's just going to get worse. So it's an interesting story. Sandra Cano, who said, cunning, wicked lawyers, involved her in a trademark abortion case. Well, she died September 30th of an extended illness. She was 66. Her dying wish was for people to pray for an end of abortion in America and to pray for her family. Alan Parker, president of the Justice Foundation in Texas, which represented Ms. Cano for 14 years, said on Wednesday. You see, Ms. Cano, she was Mary Doe in the 1973 Supreme Court case that challenged Georgia's restrictive abortion laws. When the High Court struck down Georgia's laws, other state laws restricting abortion were also swept away. Together with a companion case, Roe v. Wade, the court cases resulted in the legalization of abortions, she called the lawyers. It is at the end of the last segment, as I was discussing the Mary Doe that was one of the two women that was used to make abortion for any reason legal throughout what is now the entire pregnancy, that the new form of birth control would be to kill the unborn. She called the lawyers that manipulated her cunning and wicked. She was actually opposed to abortion. Now, I am not, and you've never heard me, I don't think, on this program, speak of abortion. And the reason is because it's an issue that there, for which there will never be any favorable resolution in America. To talk about abortion and to have that be your issue, you're just wasting your time. Abortion will continue to be the law of the land. A woman is going to have the ability to abort a unborn child. Now, realistically, the whole world would be better off if we made adoption easier, more desirable, more financially beneficial, if we changed our outlook. But part of the problem, too, is that way too many abortions are being conducted in the African-American community. And way too many are truncated births for those who drink too much, eat too much, eat the wrong things, do drugs, where they would have all sorts of legacy issues. And it is true that there aren't a lot of people within the ethnic group that is producing most of these per capita willing to step up and say, I'll take responsibility for the unborn child. And it's just the nature of things where people are no longer responsible. Sex is no longer just thought of as being something we ought to do with those that we love, that we have a long-term commitment to, that is not something that is done within marriage. Most children today are born outside of marriage. Most pregnancies occur outside of marriage. But we're not going to resolve this issue. It's never going to be overturned. So you're wasting your time to make this your issue. I just thought that it was interesting that one of the two women, Sandra Cano, who was Mary Doe in the 1973 Supreme Court case, said that her lawyers were cunning and wicked. The lead civil rights lawyer in the Bolton case, Maggie Pitts Hamez, called the case a cornerstone for liberating women. Liberating them of responsibility. You can now have irresponsible sex, and you could show no responsibility for the life that was conceived. It was a cornerstone for liberating women from responsibility for the consequence of their actions. from being responsible for raising a child. You know, Chawa was the name of the first woman conceived in the Garden of Eden with a Nesama by Yahweh. Her name means life giver. But in these American civil rights legislation became the cornerstone for taking away life. God had a plan. Man changed that plan. That was according to this civil rights lawyer's obituary in the New York Times. Ms. Holmes once told an Atlanta area legal newspaper that she respected Mrs. Cano's decision to change her position on abortion, but denied pressuring her to challenge the Georgia law. So here's the woman who said that she was manipulated and pressured by conniving and wicked lawyers. And the lawyer says, nah, we didn't do any of that. I have no idea why she would say that of us. Friends of Ms. Holmes said that she was painstaking in her legal efforts. But Mrs. Cano testified to Congress that cunning and wicked lawyers used her to twist the American court system in a fraudulent way. She said she sought help as early as 1970 from the Atlanta Legal Aid Office because she was unhappily married, unstable, and pregnant with her fourth child. She also insisted through the papers that she signed for Mrs. Holmes and other lawyers. They were about child custody, is what she was told. About divorce, not about abortion. She was misled.